So next we have Steve Dubois, and Steve is in his final year of in a clinical psychology PhD program at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He is currently a psychology intern at Heinz Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Chicago, and his published manuscripts investigate LGBT health behaviors and disparities, particularly substance use, sexual risk among men who have sex with men, and clinical interests include working with the seriously mentally ill in psychosocial rehabilitation settings. And Steve hopes to enter academia next fall, where he can contribute to his research and teach about things that he loves. So please help me welcome Steve.
Thank you. If any of you know of any academic positions open, please let me know. I'm the guy that just asked the question about additional outcomes related to stressors experienced by bisexuals and African Americans. And I think that was inadvertently insightful into what I'm interested in terms of research, because we're going to be talking about such outcomes in this study. So I think the program is the exact primary finding of my study, and so instead of making that the title of the presentation, I changed it up a bit, because if you read the title, it's like you might not have to listen to the presentation. So this is from my dissertation research. It's one of three studies that I've run, and the whole of the dissertation is called What's Love Got to Do with It? And overall, I'm looking at the relationship between being partnered and health outcomes within the gay and bisexual male communities. The title of this presentation, then, is Primary Partnership and Health Benefits Among Gay and Bisexual HIV-Positive Men. My other studies look at different populations, but this one is looking at the HIV-positive men. So here we go. Here's the research funnel. We're going to start broadly and tell you about the social support and stress model. That's one of the theoretical premises for my dissertation. Then we're going to move down, get more specific into the funnel, and look today just at study one. The stress and social support model, generally speaking, says that emotional or instrumental support from others influences health outcomes. When we say instrumental support, we mean things like somebody to take you to your doctor's appointments. When we say emotional support, we mean somebody that you can rely on to talk to about various problems. The evidence for this theory is significant. Essentially, health benefits are associated with high quantity or quality of these types of support. And this is across domains. So, generally speaking, we have lower morbidity and mortality rates among those who report high levels of social support. Physiologically speaking, those with social support have better cardiovascular, endocrine, and immune system functioning. So if you get diagnosed with a disease, or even if you have a common cold, and you have you report high levels of social support, you're more likely to recover from the common cold more quickly, or you're more likely to recover from even a chronic disease more quickly than those who do not report high levels of social support. Psychologically speaking, those who are well supported report fewer symptoms of depression and anxiety. And in terms of physical health or health behaviors, things like treatment adherence, for example, relevant to this study, adherence to your HIV medications, those rates are going to be higher among those who report higher levels of social support, which makes sense. You know, you have somebody around to remind you to take your meds or to support you in doing so. So that's the general big finding in the literature. I don't think we're wholly surprised by that. But let's talk about partnership specifically, which is one specific type of social support that some of us are lucky to have. So in terms of partnership and health benefits among heterosexuals, so the literature is rich with evidence supporting the fact that those heterosexuals that are partnered fare better in terms of health than those who are single. Once again, generally speaking, heterosexuals who are partnered, for example, live longer. And as I said before, they also recover from diseases and things like the common cold quicker than heterosexuals who are single. Physiologically speaking, they're at lower risk for chronic disease and higher survival rates when diagnosed with these diseases, as mentioned earlier. Psychologically, those who are partnered report greater levels of happiness and life satisfaction than those who are single. They're also less depressed, less anxious, and less likely to attempt and successfully commit suicide. Physically speaking, those who are partnered smoke less and use hard drugs less. The literature on alcohol is actually mixed, so sometimes when you get into a relationship, you apparently drink with your partner. So that's not as straightforward. But generally speaking, the benefits are many of being in a partnership if you're heterosexual. What are the shortcomings of this current line of research? Because as I said, the research is just significant. If you look this up, you could write, you know, a 100-page literature review on this type of research. But there are things that are missing. For example, marriage is emphasized over general partnership. And implicitly, what we're missing here is people that cannot get married, for example, homosexuals in many states, and heterosexuals who are partnered but choose not to get married. They're often absent from the research. Therefore, it is exclusive. It excludes others. And it does not represent the whole of the general population. The literature is also heterocentric, meaning it focuses on heterosexuals. A year or so ago, there was a national poll and related to the census in which 750,000 same-sex couples were identified. So we're excluding at least 750,000 couples from this line of research. And indeed, there's a disconnect there between what's going on sociopolitically right now in terms of marriage rights, civil union rights, and the research that could support such legislation. Moving on to the specific population of interest in this study, which is gay and bisexual men. Let's talk about them and why this question is relevant to them. First of all, I want to say when I am describing the study, I'm talking about only gay and bisexual men, those that identify as gay and bisexual, not those who report behaving in the same sex attracted way. And that would be men who have sex with men. So we're making the distinction here between identity as gay and bisexual versus behaviors that indicate same-sex attraction. The reason is I'm looking at partnership, which is supposed to be an enduring status, and those who are MSM, who behave in a same-sex attracted way but do not identify as gay and bisexual, may not be participating in these very partnerships. So indeed, as I just said, in terms of the sociopolitical climate, this is an important question to ask. What can we find as scientists and then disseminate that to legislators to help boost our chances of getting equal rights? Also, gay and bisexual men represent a vulnerable population, and by that I mean they are vulnerable to things that indicate an unhealthy profile, things like mood disorders such as depression, things like anxiety, and suicide attempts. These are more prevalent among gay and bisexual men compared to the general population. So in terms of potential to receive health benefits, this is a population that could really benefit from partnership, arguably more so than heterosexuals who report higher baseline levels of things like mood, lower baseline levels of things like anxiety. This population is one that reports levels such that we can see significant increases in the context of a partnership. Also, gay and bisexual men report higher rates of unhealthy behaviors such as smoking, substance use, and sexual risk. So again, this is a population that we can ask the question, are these things getting better in the context of relationships? Gay and bisexual men also face healthcare barriers and barriers to healthcare access, such that they underreport things like doctor's visits when they're ill. They overreport things like emergency room visits because they don't have a primary care provider in which they feel confident in who they trust. All this is to say that there are potentially significant benefits to partnership within this community. Also, why is this an important question to ask or interesting? Because male same-sex relationships particularly differ from heterosexual relationships in some important ways that might make the answers to this question different for them than for heterosexuals. With heterosexuals, it's a pretty straightforward relationship. If you're in a partnership, you're healthier. Gay and bisexual males have specific relationship characteristics and individual difference variables that they bring into the relationship that may alter that very straightforward finding. For example, sexual fidelity is not assumed within a gay and bisexual male relationship, whereas in most heterosexual relationships it is. Gay and bisexual males are increasingly reporting participating in an open sexual relationship in which they agree to have sex with partners outside the relationship. This might compromise things like the health benefits associated with being in a relationship. I just saw my advisor outside. Brian! He just walked by. Although HIV is often a sort of defining characteristic of gay and bisexual male relationships in that it's something that is a pervasive issue. Whereas for heterosexuals with relatively low HIV prevalence rates, this is not a pervasive issue in relationships. With gay and bisexual males, it is. And regarding these individual difference variables that are brought into the relationship by gay and bisexual males that might jeopardize the health benefits, things like internalized homophobia, things like sexual orientation disclosure to family, these are things that individuals might bring into the relationship that might take away from the potential benefits of being in a relationship. You can imagine if you yourself are experiencing internalized homophobia and your gay male partner also is, and he's not out to his family, you can tell a story in which being in that relationship is not necessarily helpful for you. It actually exacerbates the issue. Gay and bisexual male relationships also have a shorter length on average than heterosexual relationships. There's a high partner turnover. In this case, we might not experience the enduring benefits of being in a relationship as long-term heterosexual partners do. What does the current research say on partnership and health among gay and bisexual men? There's not a lot, so this will be quick. The between-group comparisons of heterosexual and homosexuals show that they have similar levels of partner love reported across relationships. So it's not like there's less love in gay and bisexual male relationships, like they just love their partner a little. People are reporting the same levels of love for their partner. And they're the same predictors of relationship satisfaction across these groups, specifically shared values and perceived equality within the relationship. These are important to both same-sex and opposite-sex relationship partners. In terms of comparing partnered versus single gay and bisexual men, we see that partnered men are less depressed, distressed, and more satisfied with life, and they use substances less than the single men. This is just one study that was done about 10 years ago, but it's very much some of the findings I hope to find in my dissertation. There's been a real sort of drought in this area since this one study. A second study in which I was a co-author, I combined findings from the one study and the second study. So recently, I had a paper published that showed partnered men were using substances less than single men, and that included alcohol. In terms of youth, because one thing that I investigated in this study that I'm eventually going to talk about is whether or not these differences, these health benefits, might apply only to older gay and bisexual men. Youth have particularly high partner turnover rates. And also, youth are more likely to be dealing with things like depression and internalized homophobia that, once again, might take away from the benefits of the partnership. Also, youth report increasingly having older partners. So the question here is, what is the effect of having an older partner if you're a youth in a relationship? Do you feel pressure to have sex? Are you introduced to things like alcohol and substance use more than someone who's dating someone his own age? And in terms of HIV and sexual risk, importantly, gay male relationships are like the new primary HIV transmission venue. So we used to think it was like a one-night stand thing and you get HIV or you have multiple one-night stands. But what we found actually is that those who are in long-term relationships, and particularly those who are in successive long-term relationships like the serial monogamous, what they're doing is they're having sex with their partner unprotectedly before getting tested with that partner, and then maybe moving on to another partner and doing the same. So it's the relationship that's actually the HIV transmission venue. Now let's talk about the study. Stress buffering was another theoretical model that I used to inform this study. Stress buffering states that in the presence of a chronic stressor, for example, being gay, being bisexual, that can be argued as a chronic stressor, especially if you're experiencing things like internalized homophobia and lack of acceptance by your family, plus an acute stressor, for example, an HIV diagnosis, that the combination of the chronic stressor and the acute stressor can lead to health decreases for those without social support. If you're well supported, this theory states, and evidence has been found for this, that if you've got the support, you're not going to experience the health decreases in the context of these two stressors. If you don't have the support, you will. Some of the core questions of the study then are, does partnership buffer stress buffering? Does partnership buffer against HIV and related stress? And for whom? for the young guys, for the old guys, for those in between. The population of interest here is HIV positive, men who have sex with men, and again, I pulled the specific identifying gay and bisexual men. They were in Project TAP, the Treatment Advocacy Program, which briefly is a behavioral intervention aiming to reduce sexual risk and increase HIV treatment adherence among gay and bisexual men. There were 311 men. This was in Chicago. It was a longitudinal design. We brought them in four times, and they watched individualized PowerPoint modules to teach them about things like safe sexual practices. And importantly, these guys were integrated into healthcare. These were not the men who are sort of outside of the healthcare context. They were recruited through the Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago through their primary care provider. So these guys are integrated into the healthcare system. The outcome variables of interest, we have a couple sets of these. One is clinically obtained viral load and T-cell count measures. This is important because it's not just self-report. This is from nurses who drew blood and gave us the readings of CD4 and viral load. Also, we have health behaviors. These are self-reported things like substance use, sexual risk, and psychological variables like depression and anxiety. The analysis that we ran were regressions at one level and COVA at the other, and then we ran a moderation analysis, and we'll look at that now. Our specific hypotheses included that partnership status will relate to specified health outcomes, such that partnered men will be healthier than single men on the various indices that we just discussed. Except sexual risk. Given that we see increases in sexual risk rates in the context of relationships, we actually predict that this is one way in which partnered gay and bisexual men may be unhealthier than single gay and bisexual men. And we expect different benefits for youth compared to the older gay and bisexual men, although the specific predictions differed depending on the outcome variable. Here are the results. Okay, in terms of demographics, we're looking at a final sample of 267 guys. We lost several because they were not identifying as gay and bisexual and because they didn't answer the measures related to partnership status. The mean age was 39.7 years, so a relatively older sample. Here are the demographics. Let's take a look at these together. I know it's a lot of numbers, but quickly, a couple things I want to point out. We had a relatively diverse sample in terms of race and ethnicity. It's over half non-white. The time since diagnosis was approximately 7.7 years, so these are guys who have been dealing with their HIV diagnosis for many years. And viral load. We see most of the guys are below 10,000, which is a sort of accepted rate of good in terms of how much HIV virus you have in your blood serum. So most of these guys are below one of the accepted rates of being like at a good level. Most are taking HIV meds, and consistent with the findings in the literature, about 70% of them are adherent to the meds 95% or more of the time. And this is like a moderately depressed sample, not clinically depressed, but if you look, most of them are within the 2 to 7 item endorsement range on the depression scale. Moving on. Here we see the regressions, the bivariate associations between partnership status and health outcomes. Not much going on here, which is why the presentation was heavy at the beginning, because there are not many interesting results to talk about. But, you know, sometimes null findings are interesting in themselves. So what we're seeing here is that in terms of what variables partnership status relates to, we see drug use, and this is excluding marijuana, so these are the harder drugs. And we see emotional and instrumental support has a trend of significance. And also to point out, we controlled for several demographic variables in these and the ANCOVA analyses. Moving on to the ANCOVA analyses, which are a follow-up to the regressions, because here we see, yes, there are differences in these groups, or I'm sorry, these variables are related, but in what way? The ANCOVA, and I couldn't get the table to paste correctly, so I'm sorry about that. So the ANCOVA results compare the partnered and single men, and here we see, in terms of drug use, it's the single men who are using drugs, the hard drugs, more often than the partnered men. This is consistent with past results, if you recall. And then the trends, once again, we're trending here in the ANCOVA with emotional and instrumental support. The partnered men are reporting higher levels of that. All other outcome variables, as you can see, had no significant differences between the partnered and single men. The moderation. Any guesses? More null findings. So there are no differences in these benefits. In terms of drug use and the emotional support, the youth and the older guys were not reporting differences in how much they benefited. Or I should say, the older men were not benefiting more than the younger men on these indices. So we were reporting the same sort of health benefits across ages. Okay, we made it to the discussion. And I think we're just about out of time. So our primary findings include that single men more commonly report hard drug use than partnered men, and partnered men trend toward reporting higher perceived emotional and instrumental support than single men, and no differences across age. This is consistent with the literature on heterosexual partnership, except we are not seeing as many benefits among gay and bisexual men as we saw among heterosexuals. We're seeing a relatively few comparatively. So things like viral load. I was really excited about this study because we have the clinically obtained viral load, CD4. If we could show that partnered men were different, were better on these indices with clinically obtained data, that would have been really cool, but we didn't find that. Also psychological variables, no difference across groups. And the question, of course, is why? Well, perhaps it's that high partner turnover. We aren't able to experience the enduring benefits of relationships because we're not in them for long enough. And maybe, again, it's those individual difference variables like internalized homophobia that we bring things into the relationship that take away from the potential benefits of the relationship. I think just one more discussion slide. We did not see differing rates of unprotected anal intercourse or STI prevalence across groups. So that's inconsistent with the literature. We expected to see higher rates within relationships. So this study showed that there's no unhealthy associations with being in the relationship, whereas much recent research has shown, again, that being in the relationship promotes unprotected sex. We did not find that in this study. And perhaps that's related to the fact that this is an HIV-positive sample who is very aware of things like safe sexual practices. I also ran a mediation analysis, which was insignificant. But I didn't report that here, but one of the questions here is, what is the potential mediator between being in a partnership and using fewer drugs, or using hard drugs less often? It's not the support variables. It's not that you're in a relationship so you feel more supported and then you use drugs less. I tested that. Maybe it's depression and anxiety. Maybe you're in a relationship so you're less depressed and you're less anxious, and so you don't feel this need to use drugs, whereas those who are not in a relationship are a little more depressed, a little more anxious, and they're using drugs to cognitively escape from that stressor. Whew, that was a whirlwind. Thanks to the TAP staff and to my advisor, David McKernan, who was not outside, actually. That was my co-mentor before. And if you all have any questions that cannot be addressed here, or if you'd like a copy of the slides, please feel free to email me, and I'd love to send those to you. Thank you. Yeah. Great question. The question is, do I have information about the HIV status of the partners in this study? And the answer is yes, and it's about half. And I ran a moderating analysis comparing those who are partnered in a relationship with someone who's HIV positive and those who are serodiscordant with someone who's HIV negative, and no differences. But as you alluded, I would have expected some differences, but nothing going on there. Sure. So a couple things. I think number one, you said that in the table there was reported relatively high rates of unprotected sex at the last encounter. And in the discussion I said that we saw something, whatever I said. And I think the point I was trying to make there is that even though those rates might have been high, that there were no differences across groups, partnered versus single men, And then the second thing you said is, are we looking at, can you repeat the second thing? Yeah, absolutely. So one of the, like, quote-unquote safe sex practices employed by those that are HIV positive is to keep an eye on their viral load, how much virus is in their blood serum, and then to act sexually in accordance with that, such that if their viral load is quite low, they feel more liberated to have unprotected sex because they're less likely to pass the virus on to someone at that time. And I very well could do that. I haven't thought of that. I think that's a great idea. It hasn't come up. But I'm interested to look at if to see if that's a factor that's influencing the behaviors associated with the last sexual encounter. Absolutely. Yeah, there's this idea of serosorting, acting sexually according to the HIV status of your partner. So if you are HIV positive and your partner is too, maybe you're more likely to have unprotected sex because, hey, you both already have HIV, compared to discrepant HIV statuses might lead to more safe sexual practices. And what you don't know is that my advisor, David McKernan, right here on the slide, serosorting is like one of his new things, and he hasn't brought this up to me. So I'll say, I had somebody in the audience say something that you should have said long ago. So thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thanks so much.